Hey, welcome back to Aspire to Lead. I'm your host, Joshua Stamper, and I'm so excited to have Aspire Leaders back listening this week in our Teach Better family. Wanted to do a couple things for housekeeping purposes. First off, thank you for those who have been writing ratings and reviews on your favorite podcast platform. You know, I had thrown out that I wanted to get above 50, and we have definitely done that. So I appreciate you jumping in and making sure that you're supporting the podcast in that way. Also want to shout out all the different countries that are currently putting the Aspire podcast in the top 200 in educational categories. So shout out to Canada, Norway, Denmark, Poland, and Singapore. Obviously, you are listening, but you're also sharing out that content via social media or word of mouth, and I just appreciate that so much. And then, of course, you know, my highest listenership is always in the United States. So, you know, shout out to New York, Virginia, Texas, Arizona, and Illinois for being the most listened to states this past month. It's always exciting to see the listenership go up, and I'm super excited about the direction we're going for 2024. So with that, let's talk about the wonderful guests this week. So I've got Laura Williams, who is a brand new author. Her book is going to drop any moment, which is called Improvement Game. We talk a lot about this resource, but we also discuss her background because she essentially created her own role as project manager of a statewide project. As the resident authentic learning expert, she co-facilitates the Iowa Authentic Learning Network for the Iowa AEAs and is the founder of the Authentic Learning Alliance. So we're going to discuss a lot about her very unique role, defining authentic learning and what that looks like in a PBL model, the importance of partnering with businesses and creating work-based projects, and how, as educators, we need to be lifting each other up. So stick around for this amazing conversation with a phenomenal leader, speaker, author, and authentic learning specialist. Welcome back, everyone, to Aspire to Lead, where we will be discussing the visions, inspirations, and experiences from top educational leaders. My name is Joshua Stamper, and you can connect with me on Twitter or on Instagram at Joshua_Stamper. All right. Welcome back, Aspire Leaders and Teach Better family. Thank you so much for joining me once again this week. I have a brand new author on the screen. She's joined me, and I am super excited about learning more about her role and what she's doing in education, because I feel like on social media, every time I turn around, Laura's there doing something amazing. So super stoked to learn more about, like I said, her new book and, of course, the programming and things that she's doing in her district. So, Laura, with that, thank you so much for being on Aspire to Lead.
Yeah, thank you, Josh. Thanks for having me.
It's been awesome to, like I said, see all the things that you're doing. I feel like you're growing quite a bit in the educational space. So with that, will you just share with the audience about your educational leadership journey?
Sure. I mean, it's a long one. Do you guys got time? Just kidding. No, I mean, I think that, to be honest with you, both my parents are educators. And as a lot of educators know, apples don't fall far from trees. And so even though I didn't necessarily imagine this path for myself, it found me starting out as a teacher. Actually, my first teaching job was in Costa Rica, which is fun and a whole story. We can do another podcast on it. I'll tell you about those times another time. But I was essentially going to school for conservation biology, trying to break the grain, love science, but didn't think I wanted to be a teacher, and found myself doing that in Costa Rica. And I really couldn't find a lot of really good jobs, and you had to be networked. And so the first job I could find was to be a teacher at a bilingual school. I was an asset because of the English, and they really wanted that. And so I kind of trial by error learned how to become a teacher without pre-service teaching, since it was a private school and I had my bachelor's. So I kind of just had to like figure it out. I realized that I loved it and I loved kids and I wanted to be a part of it. And so I ended up going back to school at the University of Iowa for my master's in teaching, you know, learning the best practices of the time, learning some innovative things that I was super excited to get out into the schools. And so got my first teaching job, middle school. And if you're listening, like, and you're a middle school teacher, like, I'm with you. good times. And there I found myself, you know, just naturally wanting to be in like sort of leadership type roles. So like joining committees, going to strategic plannings, and wanting to have a voice about our strategic goals for our district. And you know, one-to-one was like the, like, oh, we really got to fight for that. And so of course, you know, go to school board meetings and like share my voice about why this is important and why we have to do it for kids. And so a lot of that work, and then just kind of stepping up and standing out really of like, this is important. And that kind of put me in positions of like, hey, Laura, do you want to do this? And I'm like, yes, I do. I'm a yes person. So I found myself getting a, at the time they called it Redesign Learning Environment grants for in Iowa from our STEM Council. And so we were the first middle school to do that. And so I got to be part of that to like redesign the classroom and like redesign how do we approach science education in this like kind of reimagined space with like movable furniture, writable surfaces. We had monitors on the wall so kids could really visualize and see like what we were doing and talking about. And that opened up the path to more opportunities to share and connect with people. And so kind of set me up for a position to work for our area education agencies, which is kind of a unique thing in Iowa. I don't know if you've heard much about those, but we provide free services to school districts. And one of the services I provide is professional learning. And so kind of got into 21st century learning and became a 21st century learning specialist, which is kind of cool, like to be the first one. So kind of had to, I mean, for lack of a better like way of explaining it, like I got to kind of make my job in a way. Like I found, you know, the best practices of the time and like how can we implement them in classrooms. That kind of led me to a statewide role here in Iowa, serving and supporting with our Clearinghouse for Work-Based Learning and Authentic Learning Programming. And so consulting with school districts, with leaders, trying to reimagine like how can we incorporate more work-based learning into general education programming. So more opportunities for kids to figure out what they want and find their own path, which is what I'm super passionate about, because I think we could do a better job as a whole across the country, across the globe. Like I think we could do better at helping kids find their fit and find their purpose.
Laura, you have a very unique role in education, and that's really what I wanted to create the podcast for, was because a lot of folks don't even know what exists, and you essentially created this position. Yeah. And it's fantastic. And I agree, authentic learning is such a huge piece that needs to be implemented all over the country. So let's dive into that, because I think a lot of people have heard that term, but it might mean different things for different folks, and or they may not know what it means at all. So, you know, you said you're extremely passionate about this. You are working with leaders all the time. So for those who are listening, what is authentic learning and how can that be implemented in the classroom?
Yeah. In a very simple way that I explain it is it's kind of like project-based learning, but project-based learning on steroids. Okay. So you're kind of going to that next level of like authenticity of, you know, how do business people do this? Or how do graphic designers do this? Or connecting to those experts to gain new knowledge around like how to create a deliverable. So like, it might be process-based. So for example, in software development, and this is the one I've really clung to, they use Agile, Scrum, or variations of different Agile project management. Even teaching that in a classroom, like teaching them those processes and those strategies is authentic learning. So you might not necessarily be creating like a real website per se, but learning how to deliver upon that in that authentic sort of framework is authentic learning. But then also creating a website for an area business is authentic learning. Working with area partners to solve real problems is authentic learning. So there's a wide variety, and I hate to pigeonhole it because depending on what grain size you want to start at, you know, it could be a lot of different things. But it's essentially, I like to think of it as real experiences. And you might find it on a work-based learning continuum. You might call it career awareness. You know, you might call it career exploration. A lot of different states, depending on their frameworks, might call it something different. But I like to think of it as authentic learning is almost like embedded work-based learning projects in the classroom that count towards your learning goals, your benchmark. So it's very much thoughtful in that it's aligned to what you're trying to do, but you are going to have to kind of take some stuff off your plate. So instead of doing chapter 3.1 and questions 1 through 5, you might push that off and say, okay, we're going to think of a solution to this problem. We're going to generate emails to these business partners and stakeholders. We're going to learn more about, we're going to do some research, some real research, boots on the ground research, and figure out, you know, what do we need to know? What questions should we be asking? And then with that knowledge that we discover, you know, what can we do about it? and kind of apply that sort of methodology to like whatever the problem is or whatever the situation is, but you're incorporating real entities, real businesses, real community members as part of that equation to generate a real authentic opportunity for kids. So, I mean, think about the byproducts of that. You're, you know, learning how to ask questions. You're learning how to conduct yourself professionally. In some cases, you might have a meeting with a professional. You might have to present your findings. You might have to get feedback and iterate on what you've developed to that business partner, depending on what you're creating. And we've seen a wide variety of that here in Iowa of what that could look like. Actually, I'll just throw this out. One of the things we work on here in Iowa is, and part of my role is the clearinghouse for work-based learning. That does not sound fun. I like to call it Iowa's digital project board. But if you Google search Iowa clearinghouse for work-based learning, you'll find a very live and public-facing project board with different projects that area businesses have posted to connect to students at a wide variety of grade levels. So it could look like a lot of different things, which is pretty cool.
Okay. I want to touch on something that you had talked about previously, Laura, which was the programming side of your job. And then like your association with area businesses, because it sounds like you're partnering with a lot of different folks. So, you know, for those who are trying to, you know, create something similar as far as, you know, having an authentic learning going in the classroom, maybe they're starting out trying to find ways to partner with businesses. What are you doing to make that happen?
Oh gosh, multi-pronged approaches. It really depends community to community. Iowa is a fairly big state as far as, at least I know from driving across it, at least 7 hours from point to point. You know, it depends on the size of the community and it depends on the resources available. But I would say the very easiest way is person to person. So if, you know, many educators, maybe even their spouse or a partner or a friend or a sister or a sibling or a brother, you know, uncle, like whoever, you have connections in your communities. They might be part of a business that, you know, you could just say, hey, I'd love to like create a project or an experience with your organization. Like, what might that look like? I think just starting that conversation person to person is a great way to do that. On a more sort of formal way that I've helped schools do that is to create sort of an event. And there's a couple of ways you can go about that. I really like the community think tank approach. And typically the school will host and invite area partners to be part of the conversation. I've done it where we've had like area coffee shops might be the host, and like you invite teachers, students, business partners, and you just kind of say, hey, we want to do these kind of projects. You know, what could that look like? You share examples, people get inspired and they start talking, and then, you know, definitely have a mechanism to capture those ideas. I like to use post-it notes to capture those, but that's one way of doing it. I also like the lunch and learn, and kind of funny, some schools around here have had like business partners come back to school for a period of time to like experience what it's like today. And in some cases, they're like, wow, that hasn't really changed that much. And we really need it to change because our workforce needs these skills. One school called it like the Billy Madison project, where it was like back to school. And so they fed business partners school lunch and they followed a student around for the day and just kind of took note. And then they had a debrief afterwards. So like, it depends on how deep you want to go with it. But ultimately, partners need, you know, an experienced workforce. They need local talent. They need that. They need to feed that talent pipeline. So then they see the importance of that. And then they want to contribute and be like, yeah, we can host a project. We can sponsor one. You know, here's some couple of ideas that might be relevant to students in our communities. And then a whole bunch of other ways that people have gone about it. But essentially you need people together and just kind of have that initial ignite that conversation.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. You can find out more at teachbetter.com/podcasts. Now let's get back to the episode.
So Laura, let's say, you know, our teachers, our administrators are listening. They're fired up. They find a business. There's an agreement moving forward. Kind of what's the next step? Like, what is the business doing to assist within the classroom?
I think that will depend on the project and what you agree upon. So in our experience, and we've tried to streamline it. So, you know, on one hand, the partner might just, because depending on how large they are and how much resources they have or time that they can give, mm-hmm. it might just be the project idea or problem to solve. And so here's this idea, take, run with it. And it can become sort of let thy community be thy curriculum in the classroom. And then the kids kind of work through that and then present their ideas to that partner. So very like low risk, not a lot of interaction, all the way to, you know, business partners might come on site and have sit down meetings. Like, let's have a retrospective or let's have a review session on this project and give you feedback that you can iterate on it. So we've had partners that are real hands-on like that. In high school, I mean, it depends on the grade level too, but you know, like in middle school, you're not going to have kids driving on site to the factory or whatever. But in high school, it's a little bit different. And depending on the school's programming and how they've set it up, you know, the students might go on site and learn more at the business. So that might be part of the project too, in that sort of like research or like, hey, come visit, like, here's this thing. Here's an example. We had a school program. The problem that they pitched to the students was, hey, we have this old mail room. How can we repurpose it? So kind of creating a redesign space. So kids got to come take pictures, do like a 3D mock-up. But a lot of the work was done in the classroom. And then a lot of the collaboration with the partners was email, you know, sending mock-ups, getting feedback, having Zoom conversations, like virtual conferencing. So it really could look like a lot of different ways, just depending. And that's kind of, I would say, have that conversation up front. Like, what are you able to commit to? Like, what should we expect? And kind of lay that out up front.
No, I think those caveats are huge, because you're right. Every business is different, and the size and the resources, like you said, is varying with each one. So it's good to have that laid out prior to bringing them in and establishing that partnership. All right. I'm super excited, Laura, because you have a brand new book that's launched, and I'm going to put it up on the screen for those who are watching on YouTube. So Improvement Game, I know there's a longer title. I'll let you talk through that, but I'm super excited. Congratulations. I know a book is a lot of hard work. But with that, I would love for you just to speak on, you know, what was the passion behind this project? Like, why did you feel like it was needed? But then also, you know, what is your target audience for the book?
Yeah. So yes, it does have a longer title. It is The Improvement Game, Exploring Education Through Passion, Agility, and Authentic Learning Experiences. But yeah, Improvement Game, way easier, just call it that. Well, so this was a labor of love. I think anybody that writes a book for the first time kind of understands that. It's like, how do you pen to paper all these thoughts that you have kind of up in your brain? Mm-hmm. And for anyone writing a book, I'm just going to give you like the thing that like finally tipped me over, like, oh, I can do this. I not only was it learning about agile project management, so like learning this idea of incremental progress. So had that mindset of like, okay, it's not a whole book. I just have to do the increment and then do another increment and then do another increment. So like that really helped to kind of iteratively approach the sort of the sections of the book. But what really helped me was having that outline. Like, don't underestimate the power of having like a frame of thinking. And so that actually helped me develop how I thought and wanted to articulate authentic learning. So I sort of kind of came up with my own model, my own framework for how you would go about implementing authentic learning in the classroom. And so like, where do you start? And then what's like sort of the next phase? And then what's sort of that like outer level or like extension or expansion of authentic learning? Like, what does that look like? What does that mean? And so when I did that, when I really gave myself the time to think through that, that actually generated the chapters. And so once you have that, like, it is so easy to build upon it and work on it incrementally, and then you'll get it done. If you are thinking about a book, it can be done. I know. And I would love to give you more guidance or advice on that. But why I wrote it, I think it's been in my head ever since the beginning of this work, like in my role supporting schools and doing the consulting and like creating professional learning for educators, just seeing how very much needed it is. And we are in a time in a flux with education that teachers need, you know, they need support. They are heroes and they need a sidekick. And so I really wanted to offer something that I thought would be useful or value added, much like I feel like PD should be. Like, it shouldn't just be talking at people. It should be, and I know we're on a podcast, this is a lot of talking, sorry. But I wanted it to be useful and resourceful. So it is kind of like a, it is a book, but there's a lot of tools, templates, strategies, take and go and use. Because again, I wanted it to be useful to teachers to help them out. I would say on a sort of like, what got me to that level of like commitment to writing a book, which is also could be a challenge for some people. This book is for educators, but it's also about people, like our desire to want to add value and be important. And we all matter, but we might not know how we matter. We might not know our own potential. And so this book is really about shedding a light on other people's potential so that they can step in to their own personal greatness. I know I don't mean it to sound cheesy. I really do believe it because in my life, and I'm 36, almost 37. Whoa. I just feel like it wasn't until recently that I had my own like aha moment in life of like, wow, I really can aspire to lead. Like I really, like I'm doing these things and I didn't really know my own potential until it was like reflected back to me. And once you kind of realize that, it's kind of game changing. And some people need a kick in the butt for that, for them to realize that. And some people need trauma to realize that. And for me, it was, I lost my stepdad. He passed away at 66, unexpected. That was such a sucker punch to the gut. Like, couldn't believe it. Very important person in my life. And at the same time, I just had gone through a miscarriage, two miscarriages. Mm-hmm. And it was like, wow, life can be really crappy. Yeah. And I went through kind of a really like kind of depressed time. And if you know me, I'm kind of a happy-go-lucky, like let's just make things easy. Let's make it good. Like no stress, no drama. But I was just kind of like knocked off my, you know, game in the sense of like, wow, this is really crappy and I don't know what to do about it. And I hate this feeling. And when I came out of the kind of the other, to the other side of it, it was kind of like, life is short. Why am I waiting? Why do I worry? Why am I holding back? Why do I feel like I have to like hold myself accountable to other people in a sense that like, why does my happiness have to have anything to do with yours in that sense? Like, why can't we all lift each other up and not worry about the naysayers? And I don't know. I just kind of got to that like point where I'm like, I'm just going to jump in. And like, if I fail, I fail. And so that's kind of what it did it for me. And so that's when the book really was like, I'm doing this. I've been talking about it for years. You never know what can happen in life. I'm just going to go for it. So that was kind of the mental push that I needed. And again, like, I really want to speak to people that, you know, may not know their potential, or maybe they're like on the edge of like, I'm onto something, but I'm not quite sure. You can do it and you should do it. Like, you get this one life and you're on this planet with these people like at this time. And that's really incredible. And so let's do something with it.
Well, you're doing a lot. So congratulations again, because like I said, I've seen what you're doing on social media and kudos to you for all the hard work. I'm sorry you had to go through those challenges in life to get where you are, but I will say that you're making a huge impact in the lives of other people and in education. So I want to talk about the other component of what you're doing, because I see on social media you're also speaking and traveling and going to conferences. So, you know, what is it that you're speaking on? Is it just on the book, or are there other topics that you're extremely, you know, excited about?
I think a lot of times it's probably authentic learning, just because I think there's still a shift that needs to happen. A lot of times we see these like projects with area partnerships as part of like an internship class or a career and technical education class. Yeah. And where I see it like really like changing the game is like, could we incorporate it into our math class or science class or English class or history class to get kids really excited about the work? I think that my hill to die on in education, and I don't know what it looks like in Colorado or Texas or wherever you're listening from, like what it looks like in your state but or country. I just feel like a lot of times when we have students that, you know, are not passing and they sort of get passed on to these alternative education programs, credit recovery programs, a lot of the ones that I've sort of experienced or sat in on or watched are really just kind of like sit and get and just get through it and get your diploma and get out. And maybe that's okay. Maybe that's for you. You just want to get your diploma and move on. And like, that's, you know, to each their own. But I see these really amazing young people that have had kind of not the best hand dealt to them in their lives, like their disposition, whether it's, you know, family or geography or, you know, just whatever that barrier or challenge is. And, you know, then they get pushed into these little rooms that are underfunded and have to sit on a lot of times they have to sit on a computer and just kind of like go through the motions of getting that credit. And it's like, aren't we more than that? Like, is it about the credit? And so I think authentic learning experiences and helping kids find their passion and their interest is a lot more valuable and a better way to spend our time as educators, especially in alternative educational programming. And often I would say, let's make alternative a good thing. You know, that path was not for you, but this could be for you. And let's find your potential. You know, everyone has a superpower. We all have something to contribute. And just because the traditional route isn't for you doesn't mean you're any less. And I think that that's often how it plays out in our system. And I know, I don't think there's an educator out there that's like, yeah, I want that to be that way. No one wants it to that be that way. There are constraints and barriers, but like, let's think differently. If we have to work in this constraint, let's like approach it differently. And so I see that with authentic learning projects as a way to do that.
I couldn't agree more, Laura. All right. So I asked this question of all my guests, because like you said, it's okay to listen, but that's not where we should stop, right? We should have some actionable steps moving forward. So for our aspiring and current leaders, if they're to do something tomorrow or next week to enhance their leadership journey, what would you advise them to do?
Ooh, there's so many things.
I know, right?
I mean, if this is like provocative to you, like you heard this, you're like, yeah, we need more of those opportunities. K-12, PK-12, like it's not just high school. Like, let's think about this systemically. I think having that first conversation with community members of like, hey, we want to do something like this. You know, what could it look like? I think that is step one, have those initial conversations with stakeholders. Step two, you got to have, I'm a big fan of grassroots. You got to have someone take that leap, that first step. You know, find that teacher that's like, yes, I want to do that. And you will have them. You always do the first to try things. Get a project, one time. Get it going. See what students say about it. Get that buzz. Get that, you know, we're in an influencer society. Like, get those success stories and, you know, share with others. And then that's kind of how we started it in Iowa is, you know, we had technically we had two schools that were like, yes, let's do this. And we prototyped. There's nothing better than a pilot. It just makes people feel comfortable, doesn't it? So we had
a beta group. You can name it a couple different things.
Yes, exactly. Like, it just makes people feel more comfortable. So yes. Try it out, you know, get those stories, get those students talking to the school board, get that buy-in, do it grassroots. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. I think you can start with something and just keep going, moving the bar. In Spanish, poco a poco, little by little, we can get there. And so that's how I would start. Those would be my two best advices for getting something like this going in your district or your school.
Similar to writing a book.
Similar to writing a book. Poco a poco. Just keep it going.
Love it. All right. So Laura, for those who want more information, I mean, it could be from the authentic learning, the PBL on steroids, or the, like you said, the book, if someone's trying to write a book and wants more, or maybe just to be lifted up. I know you spend a lot of time on social media, you know, doing that, talking about how we are all humans and, you know, we are here to help each other. And I absolutely love your message. So if someone wants to connect with you, either website or social media, how can they do that?
Yeah. Well, my handle is on the screen here, Mrs. Williams 21C. I'm on Instagram. I'm on X, Twitter. I still want to say Twitter. I'm on Twitter. And my website is www.authenticlearningalliance.org. And so you can find me there. Lots of ways to connect, and I'm happy to do so. So passionate about the work. It's important.
Oh, we can definitely feel that in your voice. So that's awesome. Obviously, joshstamper.com. You can go over there. All the links to Laura's website, to her brand new book, which I'll have on screen here, Improvement Games. So make sure that you're going out buying that as a wonderful resource and guide to get you to where you want to be for authentic learning in the classroom. And then, of course, if you're watching on YouTube, thank you so much. Joshua Stamper is the channel. Also, we're on the Teach Better Team channel, and that community is growing. So make sure you're pushing subscribe on both those channels. I just want to shout out the listeners too. I didn't beg Laura, but I asked for folks to rate and review the podcast, and folks did that. So I appreciate those who gave the 5-star review. As this podcast is growing, Laura, you had mentioned it, folks, not only in the United States, but we're in the top 200, actually top 10 in Denmark and Norway. So thank you for those folks who are listening in those countries. Yeah. So I just want to give a shout out when folks are sharing the podcast out. And with that, Laura, I do want to say thank you so much for just being yourself, right? Just being authentic, vulnerable in this conversation. You shared a lot of just fantastic wisdom. And I hope, folks, you do take advantage of reaching out to Laura and picking her brain, because she has a lot to offer in this subject matter. And then, like I said, head over and grab that book. So with that, Laura, thank you so much for joining me on Aspire to Lead.
Awesome. Thank you for having me, Josh.